Hello, and welcome to Ask the Mayor on WEAA. I'm your host, Emily Seiberg. This week, West Lafayette Mayor John Dennis is our guest. Thanks so much for being with us. You can call in your questions for the mayor right now by dialing 765-496-1999. You can send us an email to ask@wbaa.org, or you can tweet a question at WBAA News on Twitter. Good morning, Mayor. Good afternoon, Mayor. Actually.
Yeah, I was going to say, you ripped me off. It's only afternoon now.
It's officially afternoon. And actually,
we were
talking before the show, and let's start off with a piece of good news we were talking about before the show. Can you give us a positive result of a recent Ask the Mayor that we had?
Yes, it is. It is my honor, and yet because I'm here, it's a privilege as well to say that we are the highest rated Ask the Mayor show in the greater Lafayette area.
Good to know.
For those of you that are calling in with all those great questions, just keep on calling, because I guess it's unknown, but I actually get $1 a question, so.
That is not true. Actually,
we're public radio. Of course, it's not true.
No. Can you let us know there was a recent question that was asked by someone, and you were able to kind of yield a positive result from that?
Yes, we actually. Was it last month?
I believe it was last month.
I think
month.
It was last month. A citizen called up, and it was a really well-phrased question about this hideous-looking steel bar that was going across the Happy Hollow Bridge, the bridge that connects Happy Hollow Road and North River Road that goes over Sagamore Parkway. And it was just this gray arm sticking out there. It had some sideways bars on it and just looked awful. And she basically said, why can't you get that to go away?
Correct.
Well, the good news is guess what we did?
Tell us.
I can't. You tell them.
You got rid of it.
Yes, I did.
Yes, you did.
Yes, we did. Yes, we actually made some phone calls, and we're given the approval, because if it's not our stuff, we can't touch it, but given the approval to take it down. So our street commissioner, Ben Anderson, went out there with his team, and in a matter of snip snap, got it taken down, and now we have nothing but clear, unobstructed, beautiful views of greater West Lafayette.
That's wonderful. So,
did you like the way I dropped my voice like that? That was almost radio-esque in the nature.
Yes. No, that's so. Listeners, when you reach out to Ask the Mayor with your questions, just know
stuff happens.
Stuff does happen, and
yes,
we appreciate
it does.
That.
Yay!
So last week we were also talking about this before the show. The city unveiled the latest draft of its West Lafayette downtown plan last week. There was a meeting at the library. You presented it to the public. So we've got a number of listener questions about that. So let's start off with this one. A goal of the West Lafayette downtown plan is to expand housing opportunities and affordable housing options in the downtown. So this listener says, what definition of affordable will be utilized? How will the number of affordable units be determined and then implemented within any expansion process? And then also asks, will Section 8 units be included initially or at all within a downtown plan?
Well, the whole idea of affordability is that there's so many different ways to look at it. And this, believe me, this is no cop-out. But a lot of it has to do with the kind of data that you use when you figure out your overall affordability of your community. And there's a lot of different things that go into a lot of different numbers, a lot of different research, and a lot of different ways to figure it. But the way that we look at it is that we first have to go back to the early beginnings of when we started having these conversations about building a downtown. And that actually is predicated on some of the information that we had when we first got here 12 years ago, and how our neighborhoods, the near campus neighborhoods, were being affected with all of the rental properties. And what we were made acutely aware of is that the available housing stock in the neighborhoods were in need of support and assistance. And then through the research that we did with that, we were also made acutely aware of what our student residents wanted. And so this sort of started the beginning conversations about State Street and what eventually ended up being the State Street Master Plan and things that have turned from that. But what we realized is that in the near campus neighborhoods, the pricing of houses for rent were relatively high, but they had that flexibility of getting roommates.
Okay.
And in Westside, we can allow up to about 3 people into a house, depending upon the design and structure. That helped ease some of the stress and pressure of the rental properties. When we started transferring, when we started building the apartment buildings, that changed somewhat, because there was a finite number of beds, and there was a cost that was associated with those beds. So where in a house you might have extra bedrooms and might be able to get additional roommates in there to help share the cost. In the apartment complexes, you can't do that because it's just not there. I suppose you could throw sleeping bags on the floor or something, but that wouldn't go over well. But that sort of changes that dynamic. So what we felt was our job was to start with that first rush of getting the developments done. And please, listeners, understand development isn't just a matter of doing things right. It's a way for local governments to generate revenue because of things that have changed over the past decade or so at the state level about our tax rates and how we were able to generate tax. So developments are kind of our way to generate revenue to be able to provide services to the citizens that we serve. So with that understanding, the developments came up and down State Street. The products were done by people who do this for a living, and they do their research before they do that. So what they do is they say, okay, here's our market. We are targeting Purdue students. The Purdue students generally come here with some degree of financial security, and those are going to be, they're driving this agenda, so we're going to go ahead and satisfy those needs.
We have a phone pause. We're back to it.
Okay. I have to apologize. That was disco.
It's a disco edition of
Yeah, I actually thought that I turned it off, but
it's
apparently
okay.
Not.
We're good.
Now, if that doesn't distract everybody from what they were listening to, nothing
Go
will.
Go on. You were on a roll.
So, yes, I was. And thank you, BGs, for interrupting me. But the product that was coming up and down State Street was targeting a particular market. With that came the understanding of the cost. Now, again, the good news, bad news is that we don't set the rates. The developers set the rates, and obviously what they're trying to do is get as quick of a return on their investment as possible. And that's not anything other than just how our country works. When, they build something, they want to get that money back. And that's why oftentimes, even during the process of a build, you will see that a facility gets bought out. It's just this ongoing process behind the screen, so to speak, of how these things work. So the price is set. The buildings, for the most part, and I'm going to say only that because I'm pretty sure it was comprehensive, they were all full before they were even finished. So what that means is that the basics of business, the basics of economy, supply, demand, and then success, because it was filled up. What it did not show us, and what we have been aware of and now are going through that second tier, is making sure with our downtown master plan, it's just that one step away from campus. It's just a little bit further. It's going to be in more of an urban grid, and it will attract a different customer. That's our hope. And that's where we can target affordable housing. Now, next question is, what does affordable housing mean? Does that mean if it's $1,500 a month for a bed in one of the high rises, that it's going to be $500 a month for a bed in a more standard product near the riverfront? I don't know. We are in a position as local government to encourage affordable housing. We do have some mechanisms that we can use to help support, whether it be through financial incentives, tax abatements, something to that effect, affordable housing. But unfortunately, the marketplace usually dictates that. Because again, we look at housing on two levels. First off, the housing of trying to make sure that people do have places to live and stay, whether they're students, whether they're residents, whether they're transient, whatever that. The second thing is we always want to have a really good and positive business climate. And sometimes that means the businesses dictate the climate. And in a college town like Purdue and in West Lafayette, that's what happens. So, and here, at least with my administration, what we're looking to do is we're doing our research. We're making sure the downtown plan will have affordable housing. Section 8 housing is not out of the question. But again, and I'm not going to get into this because it's a whole nother conversation, there are certain rules, requirements, and metrics that need to be met or need to pre-exist for us to be able to do that. And also, there is a limit to the number of Section 8 houses that you can have. So, long-winded story with a little bit of a musical interlude, but we are doing the best that we can. We are creating a market. The market is obviously very successful because of the limited available spaces. We also, as local government, are very interested in trying to make sure that we satisfy all ends of the spectrum when it comes to accommodating the needs of our citizens.
You're listening to Ask the Mayor on WBAA. I am your host, Emily Seiberg. We're talking with West Lafayette Mayor John Dennis. Thanks for being with us. Again, you can call in your questions right now by dialing 765 496-1999, emailing ask@wbaa.org or tweeting us at WBAA News on Twitter. Next question about this plan. Mm-hmm. Our listener asks, what plans are there to enhance pedestrian and bicycle access for the downtown area? I know when I looked through the development plan, I saw an objective to ensure the downtown is adequately served by trails and sidewalks and support the expansion of trails, sidewalks, and all related pedestrian slash bicycle infrastructure.
And as, ADA.
And well, as an objective to ensure that there is like adequate lighting for pedestrians and bicyclists. So can you get more specific about the infrastructure for this listener?
Yeah. I mean, it's one of those things that we don't even really have to think about that much because it's just what we do. You know, when subdivisions are being built in the city, whether it be up on the north end or whether it's a major redo in one of our pre-existing subdivisions, that is always a big key factor. We are known as a bicycle community. When you look at the relationship, the ratio between cars and bikes always rule, at least for the residents. And we have also learned that when your density of population is between the ages of say 18 and 30, that's a different mindset altogether. So we always focus on making sure the pedestrian access is key. And people even know when we have developers that are coming in to build our roadscapes or when they're coming in to assist us in having the connectivity with our trails, we've got like almost 40 miles of trails. And eventually, you know, we're going to hook up to the City of Lafayette's trail network as well through the river and for the Wabash River Enhancement Project that we're doing. So that's going to be even cooler, but that's another story for another day. But it's part of our design plan. And there is a lot of guidance when it comes to pedestrians, whether it be bike, whether it be runners, whether it be scooters, whether it be hoverboards, you know, whatever, skates, you know, whatever is out there that I'm absolutely unaware of.
I see a lot of stuff out there these days.
There is so much out there. The stuff that they stand on. And it just flipped me out the first time I saw that. A guy was not moving, but he was going quickly.
Exactly. You know? It's and very disconcerting.
Ah, yes. Man, it's just a weird thing. But it's all designed. It's part of the new cityscape that people are doing now. I mean, developers, contractors, designers, engineers, they now know that that must be a component of how city grids have to be built. And you think about it, because we have evolved from walking to horse and buggy to automobiles to whatever all this stuff is now, and it peaks and then it goes back down. And when we talk about a walkable community, I mean, that includes all forms of pedestrian mobility. And that's something we're really good at here. I mean, we've done a lot of good work on that kind of stuff, and people really oftentimes high-five us when we're doing these things. So this shall continue.
Okay. Another listener question about the plan. This person was at the meeting last week, I believe, mm-hmm. and they're talking about the idea of a public area on the back and side of the Sullivan-designed bank. Mentioned mm-hmm. at the meeting, mm-hmm. the idea was presented to extend this area to include where the present Chipotle is located. Mm-hmm. Then they ask, how is this to be funded? And then what about requiring a, quote, community service fee for all new construction in West Lafayette, which would be designated towards costly yet imperative improvements like this idea?
Wow. That's a thought out question. That's pretty good stuff. Well, first off, understand everything that we do, every time we submit a plan and it's up for public debate, that's exactly the kind of stuff that we want to hear. You know, the Sullivan Building is one of the very, it's such a cool building. It just fits that area so well. We think it needs to be celebrated. And by having green space around it, pedestrian areas around it, walk in and out restaurants, that kind of stuff, absolutely. You know, we think that that's just something that we feel obligated to do. It's our mission to do. And the building itself, the coolest thing about really unique old buildings, and there's the architect who did this, and the name is gone now because a lot of just old, but is a nationally renowned architect.
Yes.
So it's, and it, do you remember the name?
I believe it's Sullivan. Or is it?
Is that it? Is it that simple? Okay, let's get back to talking about the other. Okay, anyway. But it's something that we want to celebrate in our history. So we could dedicate that area easily because of the way that it's structured and how it fits into the State Street Master Plan. Also, what we've realized is that when you have a downtown, the new idea of a downtown isn't just having walkable spaces, but it's also to have outdoor recreational spaces as well. And green space, we're really big on that. So that's going to be incorporated also. But again, this is the kind of stuff, because there are always competing interests when we have a master plan like this. When we did State Street, it was the same, because we're doing something that most cities take decades to do in basically a decade. We are building a downtown. We are building a downtown grid near the Wabash. We are connecting the cities together through bridges, through trails. We are obviously bringing our university more into the fold when we talk about how we're going to do some residential requirements. This is stuff that generally takes a long time, and we're doing it like, you know, in Star Trek speed. So the answers are vague, because the whole idea is vague. The idea, and now period, next question. We'll go ahead and talk about what they're more commonly known as is impact fees. And a lot of these folks, when you're talking about developments, there is an impact fee that they pay in corresponding with that development. So a lot of that money goes for parks. When you think about how this would affect the design and the build of a residential area, an impact fee is something a lot of parks department use to help fund the stuff that the people most generally love to death, which is parks and trails. This is not an uncommon thing for downtown grids, but understand where we are in our evolution. If we do things the right way, the city always has a very strong hand in certain components of development, then things should go well. Having an impact fee or some additional tax could prohibit a major vendor from coming into town, like somebody that might, I don't know, have a piece of fruit as their icon, mm-hmm. or, I don't know, something that might trade something or another with a common name, like okay. Joseph or something, I don't know. But, you know, it's a competitive market out there, and we need to be as competitive as possible. We are still growing. We're still establishing ourselves as one of the major college communities, not just in the state, but in the country. When you look at all those different kind of metric-y things that they measure you by, we're always in the top five, if not in the top two, about safety, about growth, about development, blah, blah. So we want to make sure that stuff like that it continues down the road. And the investments that are coming on right now are going to be the investments that will carry us into this future. So we're not opposed to it. It would have to go through our legislative process to be done. It isn't a new idea. It's something that we have looked at. But again, you know, you just want to keep that balance to make sure that things continue to go in the right direction.
Okay, we have one more plan question.
I thought you were going to say one more question. It's like, I haven't talked that much.
No, we just have one more development plan question. Okay.
Oh, okay.
So the idea was presented of enforcing stair-step regulations to new construction, regarding each building being no taller than twice the height of its neighbor. This listener says, while in theory this may sound like a good plan, why hasn't it been extended to apply to buildings across the street from existing buildings, especially with respect for historic buildings?
That is a great question. There is a rule of thumb when it comes to development. And usually it's phrased in the thou shalt not, you know. You don't want to do something that's going to be so monolithic and that it sticks out like a thumb in a pickle jar. You want things to have sort of that nice urban feel. And when you're really, and again, this is kind of complimentary to the answer to the last question. When you're doing all this in such a quick period of time, you are in a position to say yes and no. The height of buildings and some of the designs of buildings and some of the stuff that they use on the outside of buildings is something that we can provide a lot of suggestions and guidance to. But there are different levels of approval. In the infamous words of, I can't remember who, it ain't just us. You know, there's a lot of other governmental bodies that are involved in this. The Area Plan Commission being one. And they are the drivers of a lot of these things. There's a certain zoning rule that says, okay, the zone says it can do this or it can't do that, or it can be this type of structure. It can't be that kind of structure. It can house this sort of stuff, not that kind of stuff. And that's what developers do their preliminary work on. They say, okay, the city plan and the Area Plan Commission and, you know, the West Lafayette government and the validation through the county government, they say that this is what can be done. And so they go for it. And the rules say so. So for us to have any kind of subjective input on that would require that we have either some form of memorandum of understanding from the developer. you know, by us saying we don't like that, but it would have to be a friendly understanding, because the developer can say, well, you know, first off, we're paying for it. Second off, we own the property. Third off, the law says we can do it. So sorry, Charlie, you've got to kind of watch what you're up to on that one.
We have another listener question. It is not about the plan. So put on a different thinking cap. Okay, with street lane markers fading, it would be helpful, especially to newcomers, to install overhead lane indicator signage in places where there is none now. Two places these are needed are at Nighthawk Drive and Sagamore Parkway, and at Salisbury and Fowler. The mayor is writing down these intersections right now.
Well, I'll get it from you when we're done, because you got the questions printed,
sure,
don't you?
Absolutely.
Or are you just recalling these from memory?
I am looking at them right
okay,
now.
Okay, just don't forget to remind me of those.
I will not.
Yeah, we have gone through all kinds of different iterations. We've had some interesting circumstances involving signs lately, specifically if they've got cute little turtles on them.
Yes, that's correct.
Yeah, and you know, so what we do, and again, this is stuff that you don't really care about, but it's just kind of good to file away. We make our own signs. I mean,
I think that's wonderful.
I do too.
I think that's great.
You know, I want to do my Heisman pose, and we'll just have the Mayor John sign of "Don't go here" or something. But we have the plates. We've got the molds. We have a machine that cuts them, and then we have a machine that makes that reflective green and white stuff on it. So for us, that's very cheap. Mm-hmm. I mean, if they get knocked down in an accident, if somebody steals it for some sentimental reason, we can replace it pretty quickly. Excuse me. Anytime that you go beyond that, you're talking about, and this is just on the maintenance side, you're talking about a significant expense. A lot of those illuminated signs are in protected areas. And by that means they're places where there's a lot of pedestrians, a lot of cars, a lot of lighting, a lot of traffic, and it would make the vandalism of those much more challenging. In West Lafayette, we have a lot of signs that if we were to do that outside of our inner urban belt, it could create some challenges. So there's that. The other thing is that the maintenance issue comes into play. They're very challenging to maintain. With the extreme weather situations that we have here, they come and go, they break, the electricity goes out, the poles have to be wired, they have to go. I mean, there's a lot of different reasons why it's a bit of a challenge. But that's not to say that it won't ever happen. With the technology that's coming out, you know, with the microfiber lines, with the different things that we can utilize, I could see us doing that in the future at major intersections, because it does get so confusing. And you got street lights, you got traffic signals, you got flashing lights for crossing into it. It can be very confusing. So it's something we can look at in the future. Make sure we highlight that question too.
Okay. Another kind of big picture listener question. They say, according to Food Finders, nearly 16% of Tippecanoe County is food insecure.
Mm-hmm.
Do you feel enough is being done to address food insecurity in West Lafayette? Or do you feel that more could be done? And how can the city of West Lafayette help with this
issue? We are big fans of Food Finders. Katie Bunder just is one of the most awesome people I've ever met. And she works her butt off. She and her team do so, so, so much. But the challenge is that when we talk about food insecurity, it's not necessarily just the volume of food that's coming in. It's the quality of food as well. And Katie's taught me a lot over the past decade about how this affects our population base. Because the presumption is in West Lafayette, we're cool. You know, we've got all this stuff going on and everything's great. And everybody's happy and wealthy and feeding themselves great. But they're not. every year with Food Finders, we partner and we deliver, it's with Meals on Wheels, which is sponsored by Food. We deliver meals out to different locations. Mm-hmm. The mayors do, Tony and I. And it's surprising to see exactly what situations are going out there. But the only way to solve it is to get citizen involvement. You know, we have a lot of charitable organizations here. Some of them are codependent. Some of them are actually under a larger umbrella of, say, the United Way. But the best way to help solve that problem is to contribute, is to volunteer, is to do some research on the organizations that you feel strongly about and participate. The other side of it is that make us aware of situations and circumstances that might need some sort of governmental or institutional support so we can go out there and target those areas. We are very fortunate here because we have very low unemployment, a lot of opportunities to work. But sometimes where we fall through the cracks is when it comes to making sure that the food that's on the table is nutritious, specifically for the kids. I mean, there are kids that are going to school now that, and they might have had a Twinkie for breakfast or something. But there's a lot of educational components that we could do out there. And again, support food finders, because they're big rock stars in this.
Okay. We are going to shift away from listener questions here as we get into our final minutes here.
Well, because that's what you got to do. You got to keep me on task, because you need to start fidgeting. I think I got to hurry up with my answer.
Okay. So I know.
This is Radio Insider Baseball here, folks.
It is very true. So we know that the League of Women Voters has issued some invitations to a series of debates to local political candidates, including yourself, ahead of this November's election. Mm-hmm. So I know your opponent, Zach Bale, has agreed to participate in a debate with you. So mm-hmm. I just wanted to ask, are you going to agree to participate in that debate?
Well, I hope so. But every year we go on a junket to D.C.
A junket to D.C. Okay.
Yes. There's a group of us that go through the chamber. We go to Washington, D.C. to meet with our federal our senators and our congressmen and people like that. It just so happens that this is at the same time that the league is having their forum.
Okay.
So we are looking right now to see what we can do about that.
Okay.
Sure. It's your job as a candidate to do these sort of things. But right now we got to figure out how to unconflict it.
Okay. Do you have,
or else maybe I could do it, you know, on camera or like video or.
Right. Do you have a timeline in mind for when? I think I want to say that your debate is the 10th of October. It's something like that.
Yeah, because that week is when we're going.
So do you have any kind of, I don't know, even a rough thought of when you might want to commit one way or another?
Well, as soon as I get the green light from the chamber of the dates, and I think they're solidified. I haven't talked to my assistant all day long because I've been out doing stuff. But as soon as those dates are solidified, then we'll know.
We have about 2 minutes left. I'm going to ask you what I'll talk about. I'll simply refer to this as the high-rise beer toss situation. Since videos have shown people throwing beer cans and other objects between the hub and the Rise building. So I guess the big overarching question here for you is, what can the city reasonably do about this?
I don't know. Outlaw dude bros?
Perhaps I'm naive. I've been saying this. It looks like this actually came up in discussions as these buildings were being developed.
Yes.
The thought process that things would actually be tossed back and forth. I did not realize this was even an issue. So 30 seconds, Mayor, what can we do here? What can West Lafayette
do? All we can do is hope that people who come to college here are as adult as their age. They're in a position to do a lot of good things in life. And doing something like that and getting caught for it could ruin you for the rest of your life. It's a crime. And if somebody were to get hurt, it's a big crime. And if somebody were to get hurt bad, it's a big, serious crime. And it's really hard to get a graduate degree in prison. So that's just one of those knock that stuff off kind of conversations. But truly, grow up, folks. I mean, I know college is a great experimental period in your life, but don't hurt anybody while you're doing so.
So that's our final word on the matter here. And ask the mayor today. Genuinely wanted to get to that question.
Well,
all right.
I did good. I didn't
you
use
did
any
great.
Profanity.
So that is our time for today. Mayor Dennis, thanks so much for being with us. You
Such
can
pleasure.
Find this program on our website, WBAA.org, along with an archive of our shows with the mayors of Lafayette, Crawfordsville, and Frankfort. Send us your questions at ask@WBAA.org or tweet us at WBAA News on Twitter. Thanks so much for listening and have a great rest of the day.
Support for WBAA comes from your membership and Encompass Credit Union, supporting Ask the Mayor and offering a full line of financial services to the people of Clinton and Tipton counties while supporting the communities they serve. More information at EncompassCU.org.